This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Nespresso, bringing you the perfect blend of global market analysis and insights.
BFM 89.9, good morning. You are listening to The Morning Run. I'm Shazana Mokhtar in studio today with Kusu Chuang and Philip C. We will first recap how global markets ended trading yesterday.
Well, in America, the Dow closed flat, in fact, marginally lower by just 0.02%. The S&P and both and Nasdaq both marked gains between 0.3% and 0.6%. And of course, preceding that, Asian markets were largely lower. The Nikkei, the Hang Seng, the Shanghai Comp all down. No, in fact, the Nikkei, the Hang Seng, the Singapore Straits Times and the KLCI were all down, with the exception of Shanghai Composite, which actually rose marginally by 0.2%.
That's right. So for an outlook on global markets and what's moving markets, we have on the line Tim O'Holland, president of TJM Limited in Chicago. Good morning, Tim. Welcome as always. The Dow has been reaching record levels, but what will happen to equity markets when the Fed starts tapering as expected sometime in November?
Well, good morning. Great to be back. I actually don't think the taper is going to be that big of a deal. I mean, in the sense they'll be buying fewer bonds. So what, instead of 120 billion, they'll be buying 80 or 90 billion. So it's still going to be net positive, and rates are still negative. So other than the fact that it's the start of the removal of at least the printing machine, that I think that it won't really do much until you see the bond yields really rise. And that, to me, is the key. Also, incidentally, I see the 10-year right now at about 1.7%. So what's 6 basis points off? It's, what is it, about probably 18-month high.
So do you think the bond vigilantes will start reappearing and start selling bonds?
I actually do. You know, I saw that the 5-year inflation break-evens are at 2.8%. You know, the five-year still hovering around, what, 2.35 or so. But you're starting to see those expectations in these tip break-evens move out. And that, to me, tells me that bond vigilantes will, I think, actually dictate where we're going to be going in financial markets. And I think sooner rather than later.
Yeah, but Tim, in America, of course, all the three major indexes are all marking great gains, between 16% and 18% on a year-to-date basis. What's really driving the rally? And I think more importantly, how's it going to look like going into the fourth quarter of the year?
Well, let's see, money supply expanded by, what, almost 40% in the past 18 months. So you're in a sea of liquidity and you have negative real interest rates and inflation. Let's look at inflation. The only real hedge against inflation, I mean, other than Bitcoin, is probably, you know, is your stocks, equities, you know, and you're seeing that. Even in the Weimar Republic, when they had the hyperinflation, you know, stocks rallied, at least in marks, for quite some time during it. So I think what you're seeing is it's the real reflation trade are the equity markets, but it's the sea of liquidity and negative real interest rates. And no doubt there's been some earnings, but I think these valuations and market caps, especially when you're talking about several stocks greater than the market cap of Western Europe or Japan, I think is a little bit much. So, but that's the one thing that they can do, as long as long-term rates and the discount factor remains low as it is for asset pricing. So that game will go until it doesn't.
So what's your sense of the longevity of this equity market rally, Tim?
Oh boy, I tell you one thing. This is one like I don't think I've ever expected to see, because it just is relentless and there's dip buying. But when we start getting bond yields, I think closer to 2%, maybe above 1.75, 1.8, but 2%, I think Goldman said 2.3%. That's when I think you really start to see some reality set in. But, you know, also look at now, the NASDAQ's down, what, futures are down, what, 75 points. I believe there was some news from Snap about this advertising on Apple's double click opt-in advertising, which has hit some of these giant techs on that are tied to advertising. So these things you can't really predict, but I still think that you're closer. And my way of playing it would be, you know, to be a market neutral type person or delta neutral type person, would be long the equal weighted and short the cap weighted. And I think that will express the view that I have.
And Tim, if we could zoom in on Tesla, they have seen higher revenue and profits last quarter, backed by record gross margins for its automotive business. How did they achieve that in the face of chip shortages and disruptions at their production plants?
Boy, never will I ever doubt Elon Musk, and I have for years. You know, he's it's really an incredible company, but it's, you know, I think they're different than the other auto companies. And I think that they have, I think their operation and their plant in China is something. And they also have all these other, you know, a lot of other businesses tied, you know, around the auto, ancillary businesses. So, you know, again, I think Tesla is a story, certainly a stock that I've underestimated. But I just think on a pullback, I want to own that stock, on a good pullback.
Who do you think can challenge Tesla? Do you think it's the conventional autos or the upstarts like Rivian?
You know, I'm not so sure. I think Tesla's kind of in a class of its own here because they're, you know, they're really the visionary, you know, trendsetter. But, you know, I also think that Toyotas and these other companies, I won't underestimate them either. But I think that not so much the EV itself, but I think the battery and I think the other type of value that Tesla brings to the value chain other than the auto itself.
Yeah, Tim, and of course, earnings season has started in earnest. Well, what are your expectations for the companies that have yet to report? And, you know, specifically, which sectors are you looking at?
You know, I'm looking at the, first of all, the financials, as we saw, you know, blew things out of the water. And, you know, a lot of that was release of loan loss reserves. But also they had some other growth, which certainly dispelled any notion of stagflation, at least from those earnings. So that was good. I'm looking at, like, when you saw from Snap today, I'm thinking that you may see some of that with some of these big techs, I think, coming soon, where they, you know, they have such heightened expectations and so much built in to these revenue expectations that if they see the slightest bit of concern for, you know, peak revenue and maybe a downside, I think that that's where the risk lies. But, you know, earnings are good, but I think this is going to be as good as, I don't think they're going to be as good going forward. And then I certainly look at Procter & Gamble. You know, they have to raise their prices because you're looking at their margin pressures from their costs, you know, materials costs and so forth. So I think that the good sector you want to be careful of, I think financials are still very good. I'm very leery of the tech sector because it's overpriced so much. And I think in general, dividend growth stocks are where I think is where the opportunity is, especially as an inflation hedge.
Tim, let's cap our conversation looking at cryptos. I mean, Bitcoin prices have jumped to all-time highs on the listing of the ProShares ETF. Is there a type of investor that you'd recommend this fund for?
Just a real wild speculative trader, because I think that the way the term structure of the futures curve is, it costs you a lot. I haven't done the calculation, but someone told me it's almost as much as like 20% in the roll per, you know, for a year. So I think there's much better ways to play it than in the futures. And they're also running up against some contract and spec and limits that, you know, may be imposed by the exchanges and the regulators in the futures market. But I do believe futures markets are, I mean, I've spent many, many years in the futures markets, but I think more of a hedging than I think what they're using this one for. But I think it's certainly not for a retail investor.
All right, Tim, thank you so much for your comments. That was Tim Mulholland, president of TJM Limited, speaking to us out of Chicago, saying that maybe you want to give a pass on the ProShares ETF for now, but also giving us an outlook about the earnings season currently going on.
I do want to build on his point about the ProShares ETF, because even experts like Cathy Wood are not buyers of Bitcoin ETF, right? They are buyers of Bitcoin, but not the ETF itself.
Yeah, Cathy Wood of ARK Investments, of course. And she is a big buyer of Tesla, so go figure, right? She also is a contrarian in certain parts of the sector. But what was really stark for me in terms of Tim's reply was his cautionary note in terms of the equity market rally, which of course has been going on for at least the last 13 years, give or take, since the era of cheap money, in fact, free money, came into being. And of course, then money supply expansion. You know, trying to put the brakes on this basically easy money era, it's going to be very, very difficult.
Well, think about what's driving this week's performance, right? It's just corporate earnings, right? Really, what's really driving it this past few weeks is corporate earnings. But after that, what's going to be the impetus to drive it, especially when stimulus gets out and tapering starts taking place? What is going to move this market forward is the big question.
Yeah, earnings historically has driven share prices. But as you know, earnings cannot go on ad infinitum.
Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Nespresso starts your morning right together with the Morning Run, bringing you the perfect blend of global market insights with expert guests.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.